Hello, I'm Matthew Huff, and this is poem audio number 3. And the two poems I've selected for this recording, unlike the previous two recordings, aren't connected or associated in any direct way, at least not content-wise, but these two poems, I think, represent the more melancholy or the sadder element of some of my poems, and that's not to condone or to encourage despair or bleakness in its own right, but rather to allow the poetic experience to actually delve into the heart. And one of the things that the heart registers and experiences very deeply is pain and loss and tragedy and sadness. And so poems that allow that to bubble up to the surface, I don't think need to be written off or dismissed as simply sad poems or anything like that, but rather to be felt fully, that grief and pain and loss and loneliness are real experiences common to everyone. And so I think it's one of those notions or one of those experiences that writing about and trying to capture in particular descriptions and particular ways in your poetry is actually quite helpful with dealing with either the experience itself or the possibility of the experience, anticipating it or imagining it and its potential, even if it's something that hasn't directly happened to you. And so the first poem I'd like to read is titled Space. I read the other day that the human body can briefly survive the hard vacuum of space, unprotected. And I've never been more afraid than I was then, sitting quietly at a table, drinking coffee. I dreamed you and I were astronauts, breathing into screens, fingers in padded gloves, drifting in the black, until suddenly you peeled your suit straight off your arms and pushed into the dark. I wanted to reach you on the radio, try every channel, all my digital rhetoric, just to have you back. But you slowly grew smaller, a white star fading from the frame, until you disappeared. I wanted more time to hold you in orbit, to see the constellations reflecting in your eyes, to prove I could protect you from the cold of this wide universe. But I was left there, suspended, playing over and over in my mind the singular curve of your hand as your fingers unwound themselves from mine, and you said you needed space. Space was a surprising poem. The first moment where the poem began, the first thing that ignited it, I guess, was an actual sentence from a website I was reading that literally said the human body can briefly survive the hard vacuum of space unprotected. And I remember reading that and thought, I need to lift that directly as it's worded into this poem I'm about to write, because it's such a, for a number of reasons. One, it's such a horrific and ghastly thought that the human body could survive a few moments in space without a suit. I thought that's just a depth of tragedy and a depth of despair that I wanted to write about. But also just the way that phrase was worded, I thought was just somehow beautiful. And so once I grabbed that line, I stopped after the line, I've never been more afraid than I was then. I thought about what story could take the weight of that fear and that anxiousness. And so the dream where the guy and the girl are astronauts holding each other in space came about. And when the girl peels her suit straight off her arms and pushes into the dark, the speaker knows at that instant, he looks around and all he sees is the vast, bare bleakness of space. And he knows that there is no recourse, that there is nothing that can be done to undo the decision this girl has made to abandon him and to abandon their relationship, and yet he tries. He tries to reach her on the radio, every channel, just to have her back. And so the rest of the poem takes this man's memory and the memories that he will not make. I wanted more time to hold you in orbit, to see the constellations in your eyes and so on. And then in the last stanza, this fanciful, highly exaggerated metaphor of a guy and a girl as astronauts to depict their love relationship is brought back to a sense of reality when, at the very end, he plays over and over in the movie camera of his mind the scene of her unwinding her fingers from his. And the last line, he said, "You said you needed space." And so that last line strikes in two ways. That in one way that she exits the scene and she leaves him to disappear into space. But also, of course, the more realistic way that phrase turns, where she told him she needed space. And so the poem grabs this atmosphere and this effect of what it might feel like for someone to hear those words coming out of the mouth of someone he loves, that she needs space. And it can be a trivial statement, but it can also deal quite a blow. And in this poem, I wanted to capture the weightier and the deeper aspects of that fear of losing someone to space. The second poem, also a bit more melancholy, is a newer poem titled Two Boys. Every man is twice a boy. Once, through the swinging years of wildness, two barrels of bone and breath in his fiery chest, hands on the hot road, toothless summers of grapes and tall grass, the braille of bumps on the high dive. And again, in the final minute, when his breath stays in his mouth and his fingers itch for his mother. So Two Boys, shorter poem, and I think the opening line, I tried to set the scene that every man is twice a boy, that the first time a man is a boy is in a literal sense through the swinging years of wildness, growing up in the summers, diving into swimming pools, the two barrels of bone and breath in his fiery chest, this image of youthful energy and eagerness for life and for everything life has to offer. And then every man is a boy again. Every man is twice a boy. So the second experience of man is when he returns to this boyhood in the final minute of his life, when his breath stays in his mouth rather than exiting it in a shout or in a yell, and his fingers itch for his mother. And this poem, it's a poem that really sits in a fear of death and an anxiety and a nervousness or hesitance about one's own death, especially for a man, because in the swinging years of wildness, when a man is a boy, death is quite far off. It is decades in the future, potentially. But then there's that second moment when the boy has become full grown and he is a man in the final minutes of his life. And it's the same person, I'm struck by that the same person who knew no fear jumping off the high dive into the pool in his boyhood now lies alone in the final minutes of his life where his breath stays in his mouth and his fingers itch for his mother. I thought there's this fearful and yet also somewhat comforting or intimate possibility that a man returns to a need for a mother, a need for an embrace. And so the poem ends on that sad note of a man itching for his mother in the final stages of death. But it also can pull in a spiritual comfort that in the final moments of one's life, there might be a natural return to that childhood tendency we had to reach for an embrace of someone who knows us and loves us, a mother or a father. And I think it's just a lovely image of a full-grown man reaching the end of his life and allowing himself to return to that youthful, innocent, boyhood gesture of reaching for embracing arms, which in the Christian sense would very much be the image of God, our Father, reaching to embrace us as a father embraces his boy when we have returned to our boyhood in death. So thank you again for listening. This has been Poem Audio number 3 with Space and Two Boys. If you'd like to read more, you can continue to check out this blog, edenbabel.com, or look at the book of poetry that has been collected, titled The Cardinal Turns the Corner, available on Amazon. Thank you so much.